CAPSI Podcast Series, Conversations on African Philanthropy.
Welcome to yet another episode with me, Pekinkos Moyo, on the Conversations on African Philanthropy. I'm happy today to be joined by Jackie Asimwe of Seek Source Africa, based in Uganda. We are shooting this episode in partnership with the East Africa Philanthropy Network, in the sidelines of the conference taking place in Zanzibar, Tanzania. Jackie, welcome.
Thank you, Becky.
And nice to have this opportunity to chat to you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. When the two of us met at the EGA conference earlier this year in New York, we had some conversations around, you know, some of these things that we do in our spare time. And one of those is working for you. How has that been going?
It's been going well, and I'm very glad that I had that conversation with you, because at the time, I had been working for almost 4 or 5 months, and I had started to ask myself how I can use the walking more purposefully. Of course, its purpose is to get me active and to keep me physically active, but I wanted to add something. And so having the conversation with you and you telling me that you commit your running to the issue of SGBV, gender and sexual based violence, started me down the path of asking what I could use my walks for.
Yeah.
In Uganda, there's a gentleman called Joe Walker. He walks for road safety. So I thought that I would join him, because road safety is, you know, a peripheral interest. But I also thought, is that really my thing?
Yeah.
And so it was also a journey of figuring out, if I do use walking as a way to give back, what is my thing?
Yeah.
And my thing is connecting with leaders. I'm passionate about leaders, passionate about growing leaders, passionate about leaders being well. And I know that oftentimes, being a leader myself, there's really no one who asks about how you really are, because somehow we have to have it all figured out, and yet we don't always.
Yeah.
And so I thought, let me commit my time to walk with leaders. And so it birthed Fridays with Jackie, which I launched on 2nd June a few weeks ago. And it's become a thing. I thought I would actually just keep it to Fridays, but the people that have signed up, I now literally walk with people about 3 days a week since then. So it became a thing, and thank you.
Wow,
just the beauty of what can arise or emerge from conversation.
Yeah,
we just never know.
Yeah,
we just never know.
Yeah. In fact, let me just ask for some water so that we can demonstrate a point.
Yes.
So this thing, Kisima, we designed it because it's meant to be a well from which we drink to kind of deal with our thirst and all of that. And clearly, there are so many areas where we need to get some energy and some source. And one of them for you is walking.
Yeah.
For me is jogging.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in one of the conversations, I think it's one of the episodes, I spoke to Ashley Green Thompson, and he had been doing marathons also for years and years, comrade marathons. And then I also said to him, what are you running for?
Mm.
He had never thought about it. And this year, he actually used it to raise money for a school in Swaziland,
wow.
Eswatini.
Yes.
So he did 87.7 kilometers to raise 87,000 rands for this school.
Wow.
He hasn't reached that target yet. But,
yes.
But he has actually used it as a
wow,
way to...
As a rallying point.
As a rallying point.
Yeah.
So at times we do some of these things for health.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be beyond health.
Yeah.
Which takes me to a conversation about the work that you do in Uganda. Can we talk a bit about Safe Source and what you do? Why did you find the need to establish it? You are the founder.
Yeah. So Safe Source is formed out of a transition moment for somebody else. I was previously working with Wellspring Advisors LLC, which was a US-based firm that was supporting back-end donors to do their giving and providing advisory services. I started working with Wellspring Advisors as a consultant in 2009. And then in 2011, they established a Uganda office.
Yeah.
So I headed their operations in Uganda, Wellspring Advisors Uganda, from 2011 up to about 2016. The conversation that started happening with the back-end donors was they were growing older, and part of what they wanted to do as they grew older was to ensure that when they could no longer, you know, directly participate, and or that when the time came for them to pass on, that part of their money would be ring-fenced for all time for philanthropy.
Yeah.
And so they started to morph into, or to think about morphing Wellspring Advisors into a philanthropy, into a foundation outfit. One of those questions and conversations became whether they wanted a field, a foundation field office. So in fact, we did some research then and asked, you know, the Ford Foundation East Africa, OSEA, and a few other donors that had field offices. But for very many reasons, they decided they didn't want a field office, and so had to wind down Wellspring Advisors Uganda, but gave me an opportunity to start something.
Yeah.
In my mind then, it was merely to still continue their work, although they said, and you have the opportunity to do what you want to do. And so Sifsos was born in 2017, and we spent 2018 thinking, what do we want to do?
Yeah.
And that gave us the three things that we talk about, which is influence philanthropy, build strength, which is our leadership work, because I'm passionate about leaders, and then shape narrative. Because until then, having worked mostly in the nonprofit space and then crossed over to the donor space, I really truly hadn't heard conversations about African philanthropy. And yet, being a Ugandan-raised, Ugandan-born girl, from a prelate's home, my father is an Anglican priest, he's now retired. I literally knew that my life is a sum total of all the generosities I experienced. And I started to ask myself, how come I've never heard that side of the story?
Yeah.
So when we say shaping philanthropy, it's really starting to look at, to value, to name, to explore, to research the ways in which giving is done. Because for now, the story that is mostly told is of the West giving to the rest.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's our shaping philanthropy work. So those are the three things broadly that we do.
Yeah.
Many things
yeah.
under there, but
yeah.
influencing philanthropy, building strength, and shaping narrative.
Yeah. I mean, when you were that panel in at the ECAC conference,
yes.
I actually said to you, this is for the first time that I understand that you are a philanthropy advisor.
Mm-hmm.
All along, I thought you were an outfit that did research and all of that. And this concept of philanthropy advisors is usually a concept that probably does not really resonate in the African continent.
Mm-hmm.
When we hear about advisors, we're probably thinking of family offices, we're thinking of banks and all of that. And yet in the US and elsewhere, this is something that almost everyone does. And
yes.
so some of us end up running to firms in the US for philanthropic advice.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe let's talk a bit about this whole notion of philanthropy advisors in Africa,
mm-hmm.
and the extent to which you've kind of penetrated the space, and do you see many other institutions coming up to do that? Because
mm-hmm.
currently you are probably focused predominantly in Uganda, but
mm-hmm.
I can tell you now that the need for philanthropy advice across the continent
Uganda,
is
yes.
really big, because donors come in, they want to do something, but they probably don't know how to do it. Secondly, they might not know the context which they are operating in, the culture, and somebody has to interpret
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
there are very few institutions mm-hmm. that do the work that you do. So maybe let's pay some attention to that concept
yeah.
and see the extent to which it can be grown in the continent.
So firstly, it wasn't until AGAG and that particular panel that I started to think more deeply about my work. And in fact, I've been reflecting about how I can write about it.
Yeah.
Because as I explained, yes, while the term may be there, in my mind, I don't know that it has even settled as a field of practice, because I saw myself firstly as a consultant of an LLC who was supporting back donors. So in maybe in my mind, I was three times removed. But also when Wellspring Uganda was being wound down, and then as CivSource, we take on as part of our philanthropy support infrastructure, we take on the nomenclature advisor. I think it's sort of, it was more for me an extension of what I had been doing, right?
Yeah.
And I guess we don't really sit in it and think about it as such, because again, I'm advising, yes, but this is home. I know home, right?
Yeah.
If I come to visit you and you show me this is where the kitchen is, you're showing me home. You're showing me the familiar.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's familiar to you, and I don't know that you're the role you're playing for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think it's interesting that it has even taken me that long for that to evolve in my mind, but also because traditionally, most donors, you know, flew in, did their thing, flew out. You know, advisors, I think maybe it shows even a shift in understanding of the role that people in a different context play. For donors that are not of our context.
And so
I think it's also a field that is growing and can be indeed, as you said, grown even further.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for that conversation, because then it's making me sit with what does this mean. And lastly, I did explain in that conversation that it's new, because when most of us land on the donor side of things, it's almost, sadly, a place of arrival, because you have a certain different power.
Yeah.
You have resources you never had before in a different context, in the nonprofit context.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you're no longer struggling with the things your colleagues were struggling with. And I think if not worn well, that can come with very toxic ways of doing work. And so if you've come from toxic ways of doing work and now you're an advisor, it's very easy to carry this sense of I know and they don't, and I'm the one anyway advising. I have access to these people that need my advice. So it's really, and like you said, there is no school, right? You don't go to learn these things. So it's an interesting mindset shift. It's a heartset shift, but it's also recognizing that there is value indeed in advisory work. And it's valuable because we are providing context, we are interpreting our culture, we are availing our contacts, because many times it is who do you know that, and so we are availing that time. And I did add one other thing. I think a lot of the work that we do is also care. Because when donors leave, you're left with broken hearts. And who's going to talk to that leader? Or in situations like ours, where there are many political upheavals, legal upheavals, suddenly people's bank accounts are closed, organizations' bank accounts are closed, or protests are broken up, right? You're the one appearing with bail money. You're the one trying to figure out how to get your colleagues to safe places. You're the one, there's all this work that is unseen, as you also carry the tag of advisor. So it's many things in one. And and I truly, the short and the long, it's an interesting space and place, and I think we need to think about it more and write about it more, talk about it more.
Yeah, but also even professionalize it. So
yes,
one of the things that you have just said, which you know, made me go back a couple of steps and think, is that most of us running different institutions and wanting to fundraise in the US, for example, have had to go to the US to engage philanthropy advisors, whether individual giving, foundations, otherwise, for the very reason that they actually know the place, they've got the connections, they know the culture. And so they've charged us to actually do that, right? And it's an accepted profession that you've got these so many advisory firms in philanthropy that all of us who are from outside the US will go to, either to ask them to help us set up, you know, friends of CivSource or friends of CAPSI, help them to receive the grants on our behalf because they've got the facilities and all of that, but also help us just connect with the
donor community in the US. So it's the same.
Yeah.
If now donors are coming here and saying, we want to support in Africa, mm-hmm. but we don't know the culture, mm-hmm. we don't know the networks, mm-hmm. We actually don't know how to do it, can you help us?
Yeah.
And that's what you are actually doing. So I think it's important for us to maybe find ways of even professionalizing it,
yeah.
and even saying it more loudly, yeah. In terms of what we are doing.
Yeah.
And then that way it could equalize some of the narratives mm-hmm. in this space. Mm-hmm. But you also are very strong on the issue of context.
Mm-hmm.
In the recent webinar that we did for the mm-hmm. Alliance magazine, focusing on new vehicles in philanthropy, you and I kept insisting
yes.
that context matters. Why is that important in your case, and also in terms of the relations that you have developed with partners on the ground, as well as the donors that you are advising?
The analogy I thought of is if customer is king, context
yeah.
is queen.
Yeah.
Because it's And context is not just place. Context is histories. Context is laws and governance structures in a particular place. Context is language.
Yeah.
It's many things. And unless one is aware of, awake to the fact that that matters, and that I cannot, so it takes, in fact, people being humble that they don't know everything. I think context reminds us to be humble.
Yeah.
Context reminds us we do not know all things. Context, I hope, keeps us curious, right? Just as an example, Safe Source Africa, now in its fifth year, coming to sixth, registered in South Africa. But we knew that working in a different, we couldn't come, you know, just because we had 4 years in our belt saying, oh, now we know it, we know what to do, let's jump into a different. No. You start to understand that you need to, context means relationships, right? So we need to understand how is it done here? What is done here? Who is the right person to know? And how do we know them? How do we start to be known? How do we embed ourselves?
Yeah.
What is the culture? Yeah. What is the, when they say now, in South Africa, do they mean now? Do they mean later? But not, you know, it's all those things. It's it's really navigating life, in my view. So, I think in order to be relevant, responsive, if that is what we truly want our philanthropy to be, you cannot. Context is what mediates that for you.
Yeah. So now we probably that's a good way to for us to talk about some of the stories and some of the research that you've been doing. I think, you know, for me, I think you're one of the few groups that managed to actually go out to communities and document the different forms of philanthropy. And so if somebody wanted to know how does giving look like in Uganda,
mm-hmm.
you are the place to go to, mm-hmm. because you have documented that. Are there any specific trends or specific features that you want to highlight in terms of the work that you've been doing, documenting the different forms of philanthropy, especially from communities?
Mm.
What are those different trends or traits that you would say philanthropy in Uganda looks like this?
I wish I could. I don't know that we're there yet.
Yeah.
I think it's still a journey and we're getting there.
Sure.
So indeed, as you've said, we've done a 5-district study of giving practices. We did 5 volumes of generosity during a time of COVID. We've done a research on community foundations and what that might look like in our context. We've done a brief, really light touch study on corporate giving, because also giving is multifaceted.
Yeah.
We are truly, truly trying to, I think we're still at the beginnings of understanding before we say, and therefore equals X in Uganda.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure I can even answer that as yet.
Sure.
Although we did contract somebody to help us look through those 5 volumes of the giving during the time of COVID to say, for now, what meaning can we make of this?
Yeah.
And the part of the meaning from that was it truly does happen all day, every day. I think if I can, just 3 things that we, which then formed the theme of our first gathering of givers, count, account, recount. So the counting was, are we... Safe Source is one organization. We can't tell all the stories that there are of giving in a small country, yet vast, like Uganda.
Yeah.
So number one, and I think we've been trying to figure out, how do we actually aggregate the giving that is there? I was sitting beside a young lady in this conference here this morning, and she's new to philanthropy. She's just joined a family foundation in Kenya. And so she was telling me, you know, yesterday one of the things that resonated with her was about how there are local resources and we don't have to be dependent on the West.
Yeah.
And I said, I even question that narrative.
Yeah.
The reason why we assume we are dependent on the West is because we can literally put a figure to what they've given.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's we haven't yet cracked how to count all the giving, because maybe indeed if we had a figure, we would actually realize we're not as dependent as we think.
But
because our end doesn't have that dollar amount, that shilling amount. And so for organizations like ours, we've been thinking, is it working with, you know, the Ministry of Statistics? Like, how to start embedding a question on, do you give and how much, to the extent people are able to tell that? So for us, it's, we haven't yet cracked it, and therefore we can't even yet tell, therefore what?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So how do we crack the counting story?
Yeah.
The accounting is the telling. Even when we started to put these stories together, people were shy. They were like, I can't tell, you know, my left hand is not supposed to know what my right hand, and I was like, but how come we know what people's right hands give?
Yeah.
How did we get sucked into this? And yes, we do understand and respect people's, you know, religious or other reasons for those kinds of things. And so we started to say, okay, you don't have to tell yours, but maybe you know Becky, your neighbor, who gave, and you can say, I know Becky's story. He's a giver, right?
Yeah.
So to be even comfortable, for people to even get comfortable for us to gather those stories has been a journey, partly because people haven't seen what they do as giving. Because it's so part of our context, we don't see it.
Yeah.
So it was to say, no, this too is giving, it's valuable, and it's worth telling. So that is a continuous journey.
Yeah.
And then the account is, you know, when all is said and done, how do we aggregate this to start seeing it as contributing to national development?
Yeah.
See it as part of our GDP when we count the monies, right?
Yeah.
And all those kind of things. How do we bring it into the formal ways of what accounting for contributions look like? So it is still a journey.
Yeah.
And maybe one day, 20 years from now, when we have this conversation, I'll be able to answer that question.
Yeah. And it's understandable. I mean, the study of philanthropy and this research in the continent is very much nascent.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if we try to compare it with the US or the European regions, they've been doing this over years. And so that's why it's easy for their philanthropy to dominate, even from a narrative point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, this is going to change. I also wanted to talk to you a bit about your role in the governance and leadership of the East Africa Philanthropy Network. I mean, we are here at the conference, and the attendance is just massive. The environment is dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
The conversations are interesting. It hasn't been like this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's clearly some growth in the way in which the network has done its things. Can we talk about some of the things that you personally, as the chair, have identified and made your mission during this time when you are the chair, and how those in ways are dear to you? So that's one from personally as the chair. Chairs always want to shape the agenda in one or two ways, but also the network as a whole. What are the things that it cares about, which has brought you to where you are today?
Mm-hmm. So, interesting that you say that. I think again, we're very new to this space. One of the things that we did as Safe Source because we're literally opening doors in 2017, yeah, using 2018 to develop our strategy, and then starting 2019 to say, ta-da, here we are in the
yeah
world.
Yeah.
So 2019 is when we attend our very first EAPN conference, which was in Arusha, I still remember.
Yeah.
And the new kid on the block, we had just started curating proverbs, African proverbs on generosity. We had... And so, you know, we appeared with some of those proverbs. We were doing this yeah very same yeah thing you're doing yeah here on the yeah sidelines, having yeah conversations with people for our podcast. And so the leap forward to a few years later, and Sivsos, that was a newbie,
yeah,
holds the chair, for yeah me is no small feat.
Yeah, of course.
And what I've experienced about this, and therefore when you come to what have I tried to do, is it truly really is family, and the family is growing, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah,
if families don't grow, they die.
Yeah.
And so to the extent that I too was brought in and received by this family is the same way that, you know, together with Evans, the CEO, we've said, how do we continuously grow this family?
Yeah.
Because
yeah
family, community is what helps us be sustainable. Right? And I think to the extent that you can't grow, you truly die. And so we have had conversations about, you know, what does growth look like? Who should be members?
Yeah,
how and
yeah
when? How do they enter? How do they not? So membership and growth has been a key part of that. But then as they come, it's what kind of conversations should we have as people in philanthropy in East Africa? And so there's been conversations about what does accountability look like? There's been conversations about, you know, adaptability and the kinds of shaking that the COVID moment enabled us go through. We've really tried to be keen about building leaders that are building the philanthropy movement in East Africa.
Yeah.
That's
yeah
another thing. Research, research, research. I think we can never exhaust the data that there is, but also not just, you know, naming things and counting things, but like you said, and what does this tell us?
Yeah.
And how do we move the needle? And I know that in Kenya, the network has been, you know, very supportive with working with local civil society around the, there's a bill, an act in Kenya that is, whose name I'm going to forget, that seeks to control how nonprofits register.
Yeah.
I know
yeah
they were very, very keen in that. In Uganda, it was how do we support the Uganda Philanthropy Forum to grow and to become, you know, sturdy,
yeah,
because
yeah
it's part of the roots of the EAPN in Tanzania. So even in each country context, we've been able to start to build the country philanthropy scene, because that is part of who becomes then our
yeah
members.
Yeah.
So that has been another keen thing. I think for me, because this is my last year, I'll be exiting at the end of this year. One thing I've tried to impress on my colleagues at the board is to say, are we truly counting what the network is worth?
Yeah.
Because yes, when the CEO presents to us our book of accounts, what we count is what we've been able to raise for the secretariat to support the members. And I keep telling the CEO, we're not just the 200,000 that we've been able to get into in grants. We are the sum total.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that is the strength
yeah
and power and
yeah
reach of the
yeah
network.
Yeah.
And I think until we can name and tell that story, we're not yet, in fact,
yeah
even
yeah
telling the
yeah
true story of the growth that we see.
And that actually is at the heart of our definitions and maybe even understanding of philanthropy in Africa. If you limit it only to money, then you miss the
a lot
big
of
part of it. And mm-hmm so I've had this conversation also with finance officers and finance managers. When you are reporting, you know, doing your financial report, they will only focus on money. And I'll say, but what about that contribution that we received from that institution? What about that ticket that I was funded for, etc., etc.?
Yeah.
When you when you compound all those things, you realize that you actually making more impact
mm-hmm,
through
mm-hmm,
such
truly
as opposed to the actual
yeah,
money
yeah,
that comes
yeah,
through.
Yeah.
So I think we really are challenged as African institutions to think differently,
mm-hmm,
even around the three things that you mentioned, you know, counting accounting and recounting.
Yep.
Because if we continue using Western frameworks, we are going to lose a lot in terms of what African philanthropy looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So as we prepare to learn, Jackie, I mean, one of the things that we want our viewers and listeners to also get to know is, who is Jackie? Where did it all start? You are a human rights activist, but you are now also in the philanthropy space.
Mm-hmm.
But where did it all start? Who is Jackie?
Oh my goodness. How far? Once upon a time. You see, you need to ask that question and we look into a golden globe and tell the story.
So once upon a time.
there was a reverend and his wife, yes. Anyhow, I'm a firstborn of five, so that is where my home is, with mom and dad, who raised us in the church. My father was an Anglican priest, my mother a vet, one of the very first vet officers in Kabale, and we keep asking her to tell her story because it must have been interesting working in a mostly male profession at the time.
Yeah.
And being out in the field, Kabale, southwestern Uganda, towards the Rwanda border. So being out there supporting farmers to treat their cows, her particular line of work is cattle, is livestock. So, you know, born and bred and raised in that sort of family setting, the one thing that I credit my parents for is truly allowing us do anything and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I love music. I love to read. I am very playful, very cheeky. I think if I wasn't doing this work, I'd be acting.
Yeah,
something
yeah.
just drew me to to act. Every time I watched a TV, I literally would see which character would I have played if I was acting. But we grew up in an era where, you know, no one was telling us about that acting was a thing. I loved traveling. I call myself a travelist, a philanthropist, and fearless. I love to read. I love books.
Yeah.
I love traveling. I love when I'm feeling frazzled, the thing that calms me is either being by water or among trees.
Yeah. Yeah.
I sometimes think my spirit person was a tree before I landed on this earth, or maybe I will be a tree, who knows? But yeah, there's something just when I'm in a forest, when I look at trees, there's something just so awe-inspiring that fills my or feeds my spirit. So that's part of who I am. I am a mother of two grown-ups now. One is 21, one is 19. So it's an interesting season of my life that I'm going through right now. They both study in the US and they're in Uganda for summer. So I've been wondering, as I've been coming home late, and I have to keep reminding myself they're adults now.
Yeah.
But are adults allowed? Like, what conversation do you have about what time they should come home? Should I even be telling them? So where do you go to find this information?
Yeah.
So anyhow, an interesting moment in my life. I love leaders, and I think that is because I saw my parents truly give their life to growing leaders in the church. I think my rebel side, that fighting for rights and voice, I see from my dad. You cannot tell the fights people have in church. Not physical fights, but just ideological fights and stances. He was one of those that wanted to introduce African instruments in the church and being told, no, they're demonic.
Yeah.
Right? So these kinds of narratives spread not just in philanthropy, in our music,
across,
in our literature, in our, across many things. And him, you know, standing up to bishops, which you can't if you're a priest. How do you talk back to your bishop? So it is from those things, really. My love of music is them. My father we woke up to him playing music to us or singing to us to get us out of bed.
Yeah.
So a lot of what I love is my roots. And finally, I am totally passionate about my continent. I believe I'm not African by accident.
Yeah.
Africa is home. It's my roots. It is me. It's my blood.
Everything.
It is it is my identity. And so to have a place that I am connected to my ancestors and to those that are to come, I think it's just I'm like living my best life.
Yeah.
Like, what more would you want?
Yeah. So on that note, yesterday you said in Uganda when everything is going well, what do we say? So, Jackie, thank you so much. Thank you so much. We end it on that note. We thank you on that note.
Thank you.
That was Jackie Asimwe, the CEO of Civic Source Africa, based in Uganda. Thank you for watching. See you next time.
You've been listening to the CAPSI podcast series, Conversations on African Philanthropy.